You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 25th of January 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, we're looking back at the World Economic Forum in Davos and addressing some of the key themes that were under discussion in the Swiss mountain resort. In particular, we're considering the impact on global stability of various factors identified in a UBS white paper written especially for this annual meeting. We'll also find out how delegates in Davos have been playing their part in a new charitable campaign. We start with Paul Donovan, UBS Deputy Head of Global Economics, who explains the central themes highlighted in the Davos white paper.
The group is looking here not perhaps on a typical investment horizon, which can be, you know, sort of 3 months or so, and in the case of some investors is barely 3 hours. What we're trying to look at here is the longer term, the structural trends, the tectonic plates, if you like, of the world economy that are moving. And in the course of our research, there are a number of themes which keep coming up again and again. They feed into lots of other areas. They feed into topics we've touched on in the past in our white papers, including issues like income inequality. But these seem to us to be four of the big transformations that are going on in the world today, which mean the economic future is different to the economic past.
Larry Hathaway, chief economist at UBS Investment Bank, expands on these subjects, starting with energy, the first factor identified in the paper.
Many of the themes follow from the events that have unfolded since the financial crisis, some reflected to that particular episode, some also representing changes in technology that are beginning to have major impacts on the world economy and financial markets. So amongst them in the latter sphere would be obviously the advent of new ways of extracting and producing and bringing to market energy, and some promising new technologies that could lift global productivity growth significantly over the next 5 to 10 years. In the main, these are both, I think, very welcome developments. Concerns about finite energy supplies that obviously contributed to the sharp run-up in energy prices over the course of the first decade of this particular century. And now with these new technologies arriving, we are perhaps in a world that is going to be more energy secure. But as we've also found out dramatically in the course of the last half year or so, increased supply can obviously cause big dislocations in markets with the considerable declines in energy prices that have ensued. And that, of course, can in some ways put stresses and strains on the system, including obviously in the energy producing sector. As regards technology, here I think the promises, as I said, over the medium term are really quite compelling in areas of manufacturing, 3D printing and robotics, for example, communications through the Internet of Things or mobile telephony, as well as, of course, the aforementioned gains in energy. And all of these things potentially hold the promise to lift world trend growth by as much in the next decade as we saw the advent of the PC and the Internet do in the mid-1990s and through the end of that particular phase.
Stefan Deo is responsible for asset allocation at UBS Investment Bank. He explains in more detail the three aspects of technological change that are, in his view, destabilizing global economies.
The first one is you find that technological boosts usually increase the polarization of the labor market. Typically, you have part of the labor force which benefit from technological shock. Part of the population is dislodged by technology, so you have a big widening of revenue. And that's exactly what we're seeing now. So that's one issue. The second issue is obviously cyber security. The third source of instability coming from technology is obviously that we have what we call creative destruction. So some of the process, some of the company, some of the sector become obsolete and have to disappear and be replaced by new sector. And obviously in this process, there's a lot of job destruction, capital destruction, rotation from sector, from job, and etc. So obviously you end up with, for instance, a level of movement within the labor force, which is much higher than what we have seen like 30 or 40 years ago. You have much more creation of startup as well. But that, those, for me, are the three main sources of instability.
Stefan Deo there. Coming up in the programme, we'll consider the potentially transformative effects that financial policy can have on global economic stability. But next, we're going to hear how some of the great and the good in Davos raised awareness for an initiative that seeks to mobilise people around the world through the power of the bicycle. At the World Economic Forum this past week, UBS collaborated with non-profit organisation World Bicycle Relief on a walk for education. At the heart of the UBS Davos Challenge initiative is the idea that certain problems, however complex, can have simple solutions. Like how to ensure students in remote corners of the world don't miss out on an education simply because they live too far away from school. There's a tool that can help solve this problem, the Humble Bicycle.
My name is F.K. Day. I'm the president of World Bicycle Relief, which is an organization that we founded 10 years ago, immediately following the Indian Ocean tsunami. At the time, I'd been in the bicycle industry for about 20 years, so I'd seen what the impact of simple transportation meant around the world. So when we saw the devastation caused by the tsunami, one of the first things that came to mind is that maybe we could raise money and send it to a relief organization, but maybe we could do something more impactful and leverage off of our experience in the bicycle industry and deliver bicycles as simple, sustainable transportation.
Brian C. Moonga is the head of Buffalo Bikes in Zambia, a non-profit which has benefited from World Bicycle Relief's support.
What you need here is just basic mechanics, tough, tested, built for Africa. And this is the reason why you don't find road brakes on our bikes, because the more moving parts you put on a bicycle, the more vulnerable it is.
We work carefully in the areas that we're going to serve, and we get a clear understanding of what the end user's needs are. And then we design a bike specifically to fit those end user's needs. So for example, a bike we might use in the United States or Europe would usually just disintegrate in a very short period of time in some of these lesser developed areas. So we've really got to design something that's simple, durable, reliable, repairable, that the people could understand and maintain and use for a long, long length of time.
The painful story of my past really is that I was sort of like the blue-eyed boy. My father was a teacher, and I lived like right behind the classroom. At that time, we lived deep in the village. It was very embarrassing to realize that the kids that I went to school with at that time, some of them had to run distance of 4, 5, 6 miles one way. And they had to wake up like 2 or 3 hours before I woke up just for them to get to school. Now, I would always imagine on a cold morning, the dew is so high on the grass. And these are little kids whereby the height of the grass only leaves like the shoulders above, so the kid would come wet all the way down. They come into class shivering, and then we have to sit there together. And if you could imagine that the first class we were taking was mathematics. I mean, how do you sort out algebra when you're stiff, cold, and you've been running for 2.5 hours?
Our greatest strength is in bicycle and component design and supply chain management and training mechanics. UBS's great strength is perhaps rallying their supporter base to help fund these programs and raise awareness about the impact of simple transportation on developing countries. And then the next partnership would be those people in the field, those people with deep relationships with the people in such great need. And if you can get those three groups together, amazing, amazing things can happen. And that's what we're seeing with UBS's participation. There are many different ways to help people in need, and as long as we're all communicating well, I believe we will come to the right balance of the ideas, the funding, the efforts that can really make a difference in people's lives. And that's where I think the World Economic Forum, Davos, has played such a role, bringing people together, talk about the hard issues, get people into action.
The fact that I had that opportunity is because somehow I had proximity to the school. When you bring a Buffalo bicycle between a child and the school, you narrow or close the gap between them and their success in their career. And when they succeed in their career, the possibility is, if I am a reality, they could become country director somewhere one day.
You and I don't have a transportation problem. You know, we have so many choices, we don't even think about transportation. But girls and students in rural communities that have long walks to school, sometimes that distance is the greatest barrier to education. And education, again, is the greatest empowerment thing that I think we can pass along to someone.
We thank you for Bicycle Hudson.
Find out more about the Davos Challenge at ubs.com/Davos Challenge and support WBR at worldbicyclerelief.org. Up next on the Bulletin with UBS, we explore how transformations in financial policy might impact global stability. After energy and technology, financial policy is the next factor the UBS white paper takes a look at. Let's hear from Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, as he tells us about the benefits and dangers of financial policy.
On one hand, the global recovery, particularly in the US, but also the UK more broadly, you know, is a positive. And it allows monetary policy and the extraordinary monetary policy we're seeing to start to normalise. However, on the flip side, that again presents risks. And if we take May 2013 and the taper tantrum as an example, you know, the sharp and sudden withdrawal of capital from the emerging markets and the flow back to the US, you know, presents significant issues, particularly for the countries in the emerging world that run double deficits. If we now move to an environment where interest rates are normalizing over the medium term in the US, we potentially have a structural version of that very, you know, sharp reaction. And so in terms of what it means for emerging market countries and the need for them to reform and to move to a more domestic, focused and value additive production, being less reliant on foreign flows, it was a key outcome from the medium-term normalisation of policy. The second, you know, consequence or recommendation we highlight with respect to the financial policy is the need to avoid high, inconsistent, changing regulation, which is further hampering credit markets and the availability of liquidity. So specifically with respect to the financial industry, again, having more certainty and more stability with respect to the regulatory environment is a key recommendation from the white paper.
So far in the programme, we've considered energy, technology and financial policy, three of the key areas identified by UBS which could affect global stability. The fourth key transformative strand of the UBS white paper is the environment. Our contemporary interaction with the environment can be helpfully described as a type of environmental credit. We consume resources now and have to pay back in the future as these same resources become scarce. But with environmental and economic objectives frequently misaligned, might we be facing something of an environmental credit crunch? Paul Donovan unpicks this knotty subject.
Well, the environment, I think, is a very interesting transformative theme, because what this does is actually underpin and link into a lot of the other transformative themes that we've been talking about. And what we have tried to identify in the white paper is what we call the risks that surround an environmental credit crunch. What is happening in environmental terms is that we are borrowing from our future standard of living to raise our standard of living today. We're using finite resources, taking them away from future generations, in order to boost our standard of living today. And that's basically what credit is. The issue here is that in the last few years, it has become more and more difficult to do that. And we've hit a credit crunch, an environmental credit crunch, but one is potentially as serious as the financial credit crunch of 2008-2009. Now, the issue with this in terms of how it transforms the world economy is that this is, in a very real sense, a constraint on economic activity. It is unevenly distributed as a constraint around the world economy. Generally speaking, richer countries will be better able to deal with this than poorer countries. It means that the role of capital, the role of investment, the role of interest rates in investing to overcome these challenges becomes more significant. And finally, I think it means that technology and transformative technology also becomes radically more meaningful in the world economy, because the only way that we can resolve an environmental credit crunch is to learn how to do more with less, and that's going to require technology and productivity to achieve.
Paul Donovan. Time to hear some closing thoughts now and to reflect on the conclusion of the UBS white paper, that there is still reason to be optimistic about the path the world is on, despite all these many challenges. Ian Bremmer is the president and founder of Eurasia Group.
There's no doubt that there are some extraordinary things happening that are leading to unprecedented progress and wealth in the world. Global inequality has reduced dramatically over the past decades because of globalization. People are getting educated. Treatment of women is largely improving. There's been definitely a speeding up of the movement of people and capital and ideas and all of these things around the world. This is fantastic for humanity. And yes, the geopolitical environment is very deeply troubled. You can't look at large swaths of countries that are effectively failed states, whether it's northern Nigeria or big pieces of Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan and Yemen and the rest. You can't look at more refugees than we've seen at any point since World War II. You can't look at the geopolitical tensions that are growing, despite the fact that it doesn't seem to be affecting the United States very much, and realize that there's no leadership to respond effectively to these challenges. So I do have a sense of foreboding about the geopolitical environment going forward.
And what about Paul Donovan? Is he optimistic about the road ahead, given the volatility across these key sectors, energy, technology, financial policy, and the environment?
I think there are good reasons to be optimistic. Now, the financial credit crunch is creating challenges for the environmental credit crunch, but the transformative piece on technology was stressing just how much more we can still do. And the ability to create efficiency is something which is a very, very powerful force for positivity in the world economy, because if we are more efficient, we're more efficient in economic terms, which raises our standard of living, but also we achieve that standard of living using less resources, using fewer resources. One area, a very narrow focus, but I think it's a very good example. If we look at what has happened with global fertilizer use over the last 20 years, it's fallen significantly. Now, the world population has grown. The world population is eating more and more. Standards of living globally have risen. And yet we're using less fertilizer than we were doing 20 years ago. How is this possible? We've become massively more efficient in how we use fertilizer and in how it's applied, at least in the developed economies. That's one good example of how efficiency can transform and create a positive outcome. We don't have to give up our standard of living in an environmental credit crunch. We've just got to be more sensible about how we use the resources that we have available to us.
Paul Donovan. And that brings us to the end of this 16th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.